to go with the pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
This is a first down. Pirates.
Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. Or you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it.
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
You better get them on. I can promise you that.
Hand it crumple all night long in Eastern North Carolina.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
It was an unbelievable atmosphere. I've coached a long time in a lot of great places, and I don't think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. There were some times where it was deafening in there.
This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first-round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on the Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
Welcome in to Pirate Basketball Overtime here on the Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates, and your home for the best ECU hoops coverage. East Carolina falls this afternoon to UAB down in Birmingham at Bartow Arena, 69-61. As has been the case in many games this season, the Pirates were right there with 2, 3, 4 minutes to go in the game, but just simply unable to make the necessary plays to win a close game against quality competition down the stretch. ECU scores just 2 field goals in the final 10 and a half minutes, and including a stretch where they did not score a field goal in 8 minutes. And amazingly enough, you were still down just 2 points there with two and a half minutes to play, but just too much pressure on the defense. And so those couple stops that you did not get in the final couple minutes stick out because of how poor things were offensively. But go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, Bubba. I mean, let me just say I'm kind of past the point of even being mad at this point. Like, when I watched that game, I knew what was coming. It was obvious what was about to happen because we've seen the same old story 100 times now, and I'm past the point of even being mad about it. But the fact that you can go 8 minutes, sorry about the dog in the background, without a field goal. Did I hear that right?
You had East Carolina led 51-45 after a bucket at the 10:42 mark. From that point on, the Pirates had just 2 field goals, but from the 10.5 minute mark to the 2.5 minute mark, ECU did not score a field goal, just a handful of free throws.
Yeah, I mean, that's just there's no other word for it. It's pathetic. And you're just not going to win games like that. It's really unfortunate. But, this season is really starting to look a lot like other seasons in recent history where, you get into conference play and you just don't quite have the pieces to get over the hump. And, it's really the same old story with this team where, you play well enough defensively to give yourself a chance, but ultimately at the end of the game, when it's crunch time and when you really need a bucket or multiple buckets, you can't find them. It's no different than the NBA. You have to have a closer at the end of a game. And this team right now, they've proven that they do not have the pieces to close out games. And, it's really frustrating. And the other thing, Bob, I want to say is, I think like if we've really built this show, Bubba, from you know, a smaller audience to the point now where we have quite a few people listening and we really appreciate it. And I think that one of the reasons why is because we're very honest on this show, and hopefully people appreciate that. And, you know, I think you just have to kind of call it what it is. It's bad basketball, and we're now a 2-4 conference team. And it's very frustrating, to say the least.
Before we dive a little deeper, speaking of honesty, I mentioned on YouTube and Facebook before we went live that that you were preparing a pirate beverage, and Johnny Robertson said I'll join him with a rum and Coke. And then
Johnny, what's up? I have a rum and Coke too, buddy. So cheers. Cheers, Justin.
And then he said he is also partaking in a pirate beverage, or with a pirate beverage, and John Walker Black and Diet Pepsi here.
Man, Justin's rolling out the Johnny Walker Black and Diet Pepsi. That's a nice drink. Both of you guys. Good taste, man. I think we all need it tonight, right? Right, Bubba? I know you're not a drinking man per se, but if you were, I'm sure you'd be having one too.
Yeah. In the post game, you heard the remarks of UAB head coach Andy Kennedy, and of course the former Cincinnati and Ole Miss head coach, and he gave credit to the Pirates, for pushing UAB to the brink, and the way we were scrappy and managed to muck it up, so to speak, were his exact words. And he referenced a stat. I don't recall that stat exactly, but it was something to the effect of, when the Pirates have been held, I believe the mark was 67 points and not 70, but 3-7 or something along those lines is ECU's record when that's happened.
Yeah, it's, it's beyond frustrating. And, it's kind of like, how many games have we had an opportunity to win this year where, we're in the game in the final minutes and just can't close it? And I don't want to sound like a broken record, Bubba, but it's not going to change. Like, this team is not dynamic enough offensively where we can just change our identity and start, pushing the ball up the floor and change our style offensively. Like, this is kind of who we are. We're a scrappy defensive team that kind of grinds it out offensively in the half court. And, listen, you're going to have to, you have to do something different here if you're Mike Schwartz, because this style of offense is just not working, in particular in the last 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I need that on our soundboard. You know what really grinds my gears? But during the post game, Mike Schwartz.
Is that your Boston accent?
No, just the way that clip was. But yeah, I guess I did kind of go a little Boston on you there.
I like that.
Like the guy at Fenway, have some balls and say the truth. But but yeah, you take a look post game, Mike Schwartz. I'll give Steven Igo credit here. I believe this came from the radio broadcast when Coach Schwartz joined Darren Vaught, who will be on the program this coming week following the game at Wichita State. And we'll talk about what lies ahead for the Pirates here in the next few minutes. But Darren Vaught will join the show, and then we'll aim to get Michael Perry on before too long as well. But in his postgame remarks with Darren Vaught and Michael Perry, Coach Schwartz said the other night against in the loss to North Texas, we took care of the ball and can't rebound. Tonight we rebound and can't take care of the ball. ECU out-rebounded UAB 42-33, and the Blazers are the best rebounding team in the league, so that was quite an accomplishment, especially to out-rebound them by 9. But you can't expect to win on the road when you don't have a field goal in an 8-minute stretch in the final 10.5 minutes of the game, and you commit 16 turnovers. 10 of those, I believe, came in the second half.
Yeah, the turnovers are a problem. And but the thing is that's so frustrating about these turnovers is they're such bad turnovers sometimes, like just pointless turnovers where it's just carelessness. And, you know, that's what really gets me. Like, I don't mind an aggressive turnover where you're really trying to make a play and, you know, you just kind of fumble the ball and turn it over. But some of these turnovers, I mean, they're just careless. And those are the ones that really bother you as a team. Because there's just no need for them. There's really just no need for them. And, you know, I'll tell you, Bubba, I really liked the intensity, the way we came out of the gate tonight. I thought that I did think the team was ready to play. You know, I thought that the intensity level, especially early on defensively, was really good. You know, I think they had the right mindset. Like, they came to win this game. But I do have to wonder, I'll throw this out to you, Bubba. I'll throw this out to all the guys listening. You know, Johnny, Justin, Stevie. Stevie's having a pirate beverage too. I see David Hackney, a few other guys. You know, I'm starting to think it's kind of a mental thing with this team where they just – when it gets into the last 10 minutes, they start to doubt themselves. And as the game goes on, they just can't seem to just can't make a shot. And I don't know what it is. What do you think about that?
There certainly could be some validity to that. I don't know whether it's the case or not, but you know, clearly, as you stated, you know, we were ready to go. I thought we would be based on history. You saw following the very frustrating loss, the manner in which we lost East Tennessee State. We went down to Florida Atlantic and against FAU, we, you know, competed for 36 minutes and then stumbled, as we've stated, in that final 4 minutes, end up losing by 15. Then you were coming off, it's a different type of loss, just a heartbreaking loss at the buzzer to North Texas. So if history was any indication, you know, we were going to be ready to go. It's just a matter of, you know, were we going to be able to make the plays late in the game to have a chance to win it after we put ourselves in that position. And unfortunately, we got the answer that we're all too familiar with.
Yeah. And Bubba, when you watch the great upsets in college basketball, you know, like you think of March Madness and you think of the big upsets, it's the guard play that usually does it. You know, it's usually the explosive guards that can knock down big threes at the right times, that can get to the rim, get into the paint and dish, you know, penetrate and kick out. You know, if you look at the stats for Cam Hayes and Bobby Pettifer tonight, and I don't mean to single those guys out, but those stats, I don't know if Bubba, I'm not sure if you're able to put those up on the screen, but here we go. Thank you. You know, you look at Cam Hayes, he's 2 for 8 from the field, 2 for 7 from 3 for 6 points. That's your starting two guard, all right? Then you look at your point guard, 31 minutes, 2 for 7, and 4 points. I'm not a genius by any stretch, but that is not going to get it done.
Don't sell yourself short.
I mean, thank you. But that is just not going to get it done on any level. I mean, these guys are highly recruited players. Pettifer, I believe, was a 4-star out of high school. I know Cam Hayes is, you know, he's had a rough year, but he's had a number of games now where he's been able to get his footing underneath him, and we should be able to do more than this. And so that's very frustrating to me that we didn't get more production from those two guys, Bubba.
Yeah, especially when you have such a short bench. I mean, you see there, you have Jaden Walker, who played, I would imagine, this season high, 31 minutes. It's definitely the most he's played since very early on in the season, and he's been building up to that. I think the last two games, maybe something like 28 and 23, 28 and 25, respectively. But Jaden had 8 points and 5 rebounds. Didn't shoot it particularly well, but just 2 for 7, but knocked down all 3 free throws and gave you some nice production off the bench. But unfortunately, as has been the case far too often in the the last 7 or 8 games, particularly. That's essentially all the production the Pirates got off the bench, because Caleb LeCount was the only other person to score outside of the starting five. And taking a look at the production of that starting five, Matt already mentioned what Cam Hayes and Bobby Pettiford did. But you had R.J. Felton in 33 minutes, 4 out of 12, 10 points, 4 rebounds for the Aiken, South Carolina product. And then Ezra Assar and Brandon Johnson both recorded double-doubles. For Ezra, it was 16 points, 10 rebounds, 5 out of 12 from the floor, 6 out of 9 from the line. He did miss a couple or a few chippies. You know, one time where he had gotten his own rebound and then missed the stick back. And then BJ, 15 points, 10 rebounds. And something else of note, you had Ezra committing just one turnover. So that's a couple games in the last few that Ezra has done a much better job of taking care of the basketball. But unfortunately, as I mentioned, missed from point-blank range on a couple occasions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big part of Ezra's progression as a player, to limit those turnovers. And tonight, you know, only one. So that's good. That's nice to see. And you know, I just think we've got to find a way to get him more involved late in the game. And Bubba, we did have a comment. I didn't want to miss it. David Hackney had a comment.
Yes, I saw that.
There appreciate we go. That, David. Yeah, they've won the first 30, 35 minutes of several games this year. Just can't win. Yeah, exactly. It comes down to crunch time, David. Great point. And that's, to me, that's, you know, beyond some of the obvious things like the turnovers we mentioned and giving up a ton of offensive rebounds and points throughout this season. I think that's kind of the big hiccup with this team. So, yeah, you nailed it.
And kind of going back to the point you made probably 5 minutes ago concerning, you know, is this a mental thing, getting over that hurdle of winning close games against quality competition late? I don't know. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not at practice, obviously. But it very well could be, because, you know, once it happens enough, you start to think, oh, here we go again, and it's not going to be. And you find a way to finally make it happen and pick up a win against a quality club, you know, be it a North Texas, UAB, Memphis, whoever. And then after you do it a time or two, then it can start to snowball in a positive direction. Some other folks chiming in tonight on Facebook and YouTube. Johnny Robertson says they have been outscored in the last 5 minutes of conference play, 57-38. That's an excellent stat there, as the Pirates now 2-4 in league play. And as we know, we're right there in most every league game, I guess, with the exception of SMU.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then Johnny Gomez,
you know, they pulled away late too, but I mean, that was a pretty solid game, you know, until what, 5 minutes left. So same story. Yep.
And then I know in our group text, when Ezra, you know, failed to dunk it, I guess it was there in the first half when he, when he missed it, and then got his own miss, and then missed the bunny, so to speak. Johnny says, not sure what the disconnect with Ezra around the basket is, has to finish stronger in the paint. And then Johnny also notes that the mid-year transfer, and we'll dive a little bit deeper into this after we go over some of the team numbers and discuss some other topics, but the mid-year transfer of Vungo did not travel to Birmingham today. It'll be interesting to see how that is moving forward. But before we circle back to that, let's go to the team numbers. And taking a look at the team stats for the 69-61 loss at UAB. You had the Blazers shot it at a 43% clip, 25 out of 58, 33% from beyond the arc, 5 out of 15, 14 of 18. From the charity stripe, 77.8%. East Carolina, just 36.7%. Do not have the breakdown. We'll see if I can find that on ecupirates.com from the second half, but especially the second 10 minutes of the second half. Pirates had to be down there, you know, 10 or 15% because for the game, just 36.7%. And I know the first 9 to 10 minutes of the second half, we were shooting 50%, and it plummeted quickly, and to say the least. Pirates, 8 out of 24 from beyond the arc, 33%, as was the Blazers, or as were the Blazers. And then free throws, Pirates shot them pretty well today, 9 out of 12, 75%. You'll take that. East Carolina out-rebounded UAB, the American Athletic Conference's top rebounding team, 42 to 33, including 14 to 8 on the offensive glass. So, as Coach Schwartz noted post-game, nice bounce back there. But the Pirates simply did not take good enough care of the basketball. 16 turnovers compared to just 9 for UAB. That was a contributing factor to the Blazers outscoring the Pirates 11-1 in fast break points. And then the Blazers also held a 32-24 edge as far as points in the paint.
Yeah, Bubba. I mean, and then 21 points off of the turnovers for UAB. So that's a killer stat there. You know, very, very frustrating. You know, you could tell Mike Schwartz is kind of, you could kind of sense the frustration from him in recent games, because it's almost like you plug one hole and then another hole opens up. You know, it's something different. But I think we're going to have to find a different structure of offense down the stretch, whether that's, you know, if you just put Brandon Johnson in the post and you just try to pump it inside versus a perimeter heavy offense. We're going to have to find something different, and that's going to be the challenge right now for this coaching staff, because it's just clear what we're doing is just not working. And quite honestly, if we continue going down the same road, it's not going to work. We are kind of what we are at this point. Now, that doesn't mean we can't make improvements and get better as the season goes on. But, you know, you have a large enough sample size here where, you know, you kind of see the writing on the wall. So mix it up a little bit.
Before we take a look at the American standings and note a few other East Carolina basketball items before we wrap this edition of the program up, probably about another 10 minutes or so this evening. But UAB, the Blazers, came into the game averaging 77.5 points per game. You held them to 69, so you got to feel, you know, pretty good about that. But as we've noted throughout the show, the Pirates simply not good enough offensively, especially in the final 10 minutes of the game. But the Blazers, who had 5 players averaging in double figures entering the game, had 3 score 10-plus today. They were led by Gaines, the talented guard, played all 40 minutes and had 17 points, 7 rebounds, and 8 assists. So he flirted with a triple-double. Then you had Davis. Davis was a load on the interior, 14 points, 9 rebounds, just a rebound shy of a double-double. And then off the bench, Coleman had 10 points, 7 rebounds, and Ortiz had 8 points, knocking down a pair of 3-pointers for Andy Kennedy's ball club. Shifting over to the AAC standings, how about this? You had Memphis, of course, the other night fail in that last-second loss to the South Florida Bulls at the FedEx Forum, and now, after a win today over North Texas, it is the Charlotte 49ers 5-1 and in first place. East Carolina will be at Halton Arena here in Charlotte 2 weeks from today. Look forward to that one, and hopefully a lot of Pirates, as is often the case when the Pirates play in the Queen City, are able to get out to Halton Arena I know John Noonan, a good friend of mine, and other Pirates are hosting the tailgate. I'm going to do my best to get to that, but we'll definitely be at the game. You know, my son has a game at 10:30 that day, and as soon as that is over, I will be heading to Halton Arena. But after Charlotte at 11-7 and 5-1, you have Memphis, who's ranked 10th nationally, 15-3, 4-1. FAU, the Owls are 23rd nationally, and then you have FAU's 14-4, 4-1. SMU and UAB, in addition to North Texas, are all 4-1. So you have five ball clubs right there, just a half game back of the Charlotte 49ers. South Florida, they've been a bit of a surprise. First year regime in Tampa, 10-5, 3-1. Tulane, 11-6, 2-3. East Carolina, the Pirates fall below 500 for the first time all season. Had been 500 on at least a couple of occasions, but now ECU sits at 9-10, 2-4. You have UTSA and Rice. They're 7-11 overall, 1-4 in the league. Tulsa, also Temple, 1-5, 10-8, and 8-11, respectively. And then you haven't seen this very often, even though they have been down a bit in recent years. The Wichita State Shockers are 0-4 and in the cellar in the league standings. Wichita State, of course, is the next opponent for the Pirates, and they are 8-9 overall. ECU will travel to Wichita on Wednesday evening.
Frustrating, Bubba, to see that we are now under 500. You know, I think there's just too much talent on this team to be under 500. And I'm not saying we're the 1989 UNLV running Rebels. I'm not saying that at all. But there's enough talent on this team where we should not be below 500. I'm just going to be honest. So I think that's very frustrating, you know, for me personally to watch this. I'm sure it is for a lot of people. But we need to get it right because there's still quite a bit of season left. And I mean, at this point, it's pretty clear what we are and who we are, but we need to find a way to rally here and at least represent well within the conference. But hate to see Charlotte sitting at 5-1 atop the list there. That's frustrating.
Yeah. You talk about it, plenty of season left. You have 12 regular season games, then the tournament. The Pirates, after Wichita, will return home next Sunday. I believe it's a 5 p.m. tip-off due to television against the Temple Owls. ECU looking to sweep Temple on the season. Obviously had that double-digit win within the last couple weeks up in Philly at the Lee Corps Center. Justin Butch chiming in saying we should be 5-1. I won't go that far. I won't say we should be 5-1. We could be. But that's part of it. You know, you got to find a way to win those games. Our opponents have. We have not. He says, and then I see David Hackney chiming in again. Says, I don't know if it's conditioning or depth. They need a closer with Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan killer instinct mentality. Yeah, I think it's a couple things. One, I think it's the mentality and from not having really been a winning program in an awfully long time. And you know, really our history doesn't matter. It's these guys and you know, they've done some nice things, but also more often than not, close games against quality competition have come up shy, often due to the way we've performed in the final 4 or 5 minutes of games. And I really don't think it's a conditioning issue, but I do think depth is definitely a piece of it as well. We referenced how the Pirates, David, played 8 guys, but in essence, you know, it was really six or seven because you had Sir Malonga. He played 6 minutes. And you simply don't have enough production off the bench. Hopefully, maybe, you know, Vungo, the mid-year transfer, what a odd situation that is. But I've seen some of his film, a 6'7" wing piece that can definitely bring something to the table. How quickly will he be able to, you know, kind of assimilate into things? We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, I think David raises an interesting point about the conditioning and or depth, as he says. And, you know, I do think not having Dabunje really hurts right now, having that extra piece that can give you production and athleticism. And I think Biala has not had the season that anybody anticipated. I certainly anticipated a little more production from him coming off the bench. And I think when you look at it, we are very thin. We're very thin right now. So, you know, we're going to have to find a way to get more production from guys coming off the bench. And the reality is, I mean, for the last month or so, I'll even go maybe for the whole season, it seems like we haven't had the full complement of players available. It seems like every game there's some issue, whether it's the flu or an injury, or, you know, there's been some bad luck with that this year with not having a full roster. Bubba, we've talked about that a lot. I think not having Dabunje really hurts, but, you know, you really need more guys to be able to contribute. You know, you look at, you know, if you just look at UAB today, well, how many players did they have averaging double digits, Bubba? Was it coming into this game? Is it like six players, I think?
You had five players averaging anywhere from 10.2 to 12.1 points per game. You look at it, I mentioned the Pirates played eight guys, as did UAB, but for ECU, you had, very quickly going back to that, you had six guys playing anywhere from 25 to 38 minutes, and then those other two just played 1 and 6, respectively. Meanwhile, for the Blazers, yes, you did have Gaines who played 40 minutes, and Davis 37, but you had eight guys that played 10-plus minutes, seven of those playing 18-plus minutes.
Yeah, and I think that balance and the ability to get contributions from a number of guys is really helpful, and you need that throughout the course of the season. And that's just not something we have right now. But, you know, I see Chuck commented, Chuck, you know, Quentin out is hurting. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bubba and I have talked about that, Chuck. And again, I mentioned this on the last show, but the unfortunate thing about his injury was really the timing of it, because when he went down at FAU, he was really playing well that night. It was almost like the light turned on for him. He was aggressive. He was attacking the basket. And had a real tough break there with the injury. Just an unfortunate, you know, timing for him. But, yeah, he's definitely missed.
Yeah, and that performance down at Florida Atlantic was coming off of a stretch where he perhaps hadn't been playing his best. Maybe also seems like there may have been some sickness involved. But either one or both of those things, and you know, he went from being a non-factor for probably about a 4 or 5-game stretch to performing it the way he did at FAU, and then boom, he gets injured there in the final 4 or 5 minutes of that game. And before we take a look at what the Pirates have ahead with Wichita State on Wednesday night and give you a very quick look at the Shockers on season to date, you know, want to say a quick word about Ed Watkins Marine. Appreciate Big Ed Watkins, former East Carolina offensive lineman, and Ed Watkins Marine support of the show. You can visit them at edwatkinsmarine.com. They have two locations to serve you, one in Denver, one in Cornelius, both in the greater Charlotte area. That Denver location, you can reach that store via phone at 704-483-BOAT. Again, 704-483-BOAT, or in Cornelius. They can be reached via 704-498-4985, 704-498-4985. They can meet all of your boating needs, fishing boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, pontoon boats, engines, UTVs. Whether you're buying a new boat or, you know, repowering your existing boat, Ed Watkins and his team at Ed Watkins Marine can take care of you.
Big Ed, great pirate. If you need a boat, he's the man. So appreciate Ed supporting the show.
Taking a look at the Wichita State Shockers, the Shockers are 8-9 overall. You know, they started the year 4-0 and 7-1 in that stretch. Not the strongest of schedules. They did have, you know, probably one of their better, or a couple of their better non-conference wins were against the St. Louis Billikens and Richmond. Richmond, a very good program in recent years. I'm not sure what the Spiders are doing this season. We'll have to bring up those A-10 standings. But they took down Richmond 80-68. Also, St. Louis 88-69. They also defeated Western Kentucky 71-61. So, but it has been a struggle since, you know, they're back in probably early to mid December. The Shockers have now lost, let's see, 6 straight and 8 of their last 9. With that lone win being a 69-68 victory over Southern Illinois. They will play South Florida on Sunday, and that game coming tomorrow at 2:00, and we'll see if they're able to win in Tampa and get their initial conference win of the season prior to hosting the Pirates on Wednesday.
And those are wins we're going to have to get. You know, when you look at the teams right now in the bottom of the conference, I mean, we just cannot let those games slip away. So it's a big game, a very big game, Bubba. We got to get it.
And taking a look at the Shockers, and they, like South Florida, tomorrow's opponent, have a first-year head coach. And the new regime, you know, coming in, a new head coach is Paul Mills. Paul Mills, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he came over from Oral Roberts. Coach Mills, Coach Mills, a longtime Baylor assistant under Scott Drew. You know, he took Oral Roberts and then, you know, transformed that program and took them to NCAA tournaments, including a Sweet 16 in recent years. And I know, Matt, you probably remember that Sweet 16 run, because to get to the round of 16, they defeated Ohio State and Florida.
Tremendous, tremendous run. That was a lot of fun to watch. And he did a great job with that team. And, you know, you look at that, I can't recall the names off the top of my head, but again, you talk about guards, you know, your point guard and your two guard, explosive, that could generate points in big spots down the stretch. They had it. So I don't know, Bubba, you're better with the names, and I can't remember the names, but they were a fun team to watch for sure.
They were. And I remember, I believe it was just prior to that NCAA tournament run of the Sweet 16, or at least not too awfully long. I mean, it, kind of a family friend of ours that I'd met through a mutual friend. He was a ORU grad, and I just remember thinking how much he would have been enjoying that run had he still been with us. And the Golden Eagles, that was an awfully lot of fun. I was looking up the names of those two guards that you referenced, because let's see.
If I'm not mistaken, one
Max,
of them
it's Max Asmus.
Asmus, thank you.
Because it's spelled A B M A S, but it's pronounced Asmus.
And didn't he portal? I think he's playing for somebody else. if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure.
I'm thinking Ohio State. I don't know why I'm thinking Ohio State, but I'm thinking Ohio State.
I believe you're right that it was someone else in the Midwest. I'm looking it up now. It's at Texas.
He's at Texas.
Okay. I stand corrected. It was the Texas Longhorns.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean that's one of those, you know, runs you see in March Madness that people will be talking about 20 years from now. He was unbelievable, on fire in that tournament. So yeah, but not to get too far. I could not remember the name. It was driving me nuts. But
since you brought him up, what a 4-year career he had with ORU. Freshman year, 14.5 a game. Sophomore year, 24.5, 22.8, and 21.9. Unbelievable the career he had with Oral Roberts. And then with Texas this season, he's averaging 17.8 and, let's see, almost 4.5 assists, and is shooting over 40%, right at 41% from three.
How many points is he averaging? I missed that.
Right at 17.8. And wow. Yeah, Johnny Gardner, had not seen this in the comment section yet, but thank you, Johnny, aka Johnny Hoops. Johnny on the spot as well with his hoops knowledge. He's saying Texas, I think. And of course, that was correct.
Yeah, man, impressive career. I mean, geez, you would think with that type of production over 5 years, you would think he's going to be one of the leading scorers in NCAA history.
Yeah,
right.
I will see where this ranks. At ORU, he scored 2,561 points, and overall now after 303 this year, thus far at Texas, he is at 2,864 points. So knock on wood, barring an injury or something tragic, you know, something unforeseen in these final games of his collegiate career, he's going to top 3,000 points.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to pull up the leading scorers of all time. I think I have it here. This is actually a pretty interesting topic that we've never really talked about before, but Pistol Pete Maravich.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know if you've ever done this before, but if you Google Pistol Pete Maravich's highlights, they're unbelievable. I mean, this guy was way ahead of his time, what he was doing. So he appears to be number one, 3,667 points. I mean, this guy averaged in 1967, 44 points a game. He actually did that for 3 years. He averaged 44 points a game. I mean, yeah. That's ridiculous. And then you have Antoine Davis at Detroit Mercy. Now, I'm not familiar with this. This is not Antoine Davis from Kentucky. This is Antoine Davis from Detroit Mercy, who's second.
His career just ended last season.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it did. You then have Freeman Williams from Portland State, and this was back in the 70s. I'm trying to find a name we're familiar with. You have Chris Clemens from Campbell. Yeah,
Chris Clemens is the name that Pirate fans are certainly familiar with because he was at Campbell from 2015 to 2019.
Yeah.
3,225 points.
Very impressive. Now, number five is a name that I recognize very well. Lionel Simmons from LaSalle, the L-Train.
Yes.
The L-Train. Great player. Didn't really pan out in the NBA, but, man, he was good at LaSalle. And I won't go through all of them here. I mean, just another one, fairly recent. Dougie McBuckets from Creighton. Yeah. Doug McDermott.
back in like 2010 to 2013.
Awesome nickname.
What's that? You like that nickname?
He
played on the Knicks for a while. You guys know I'm a Knicks fan. He was probably our seventh man. You know, we would bring him off the bench for quality minutes. But, man, Dougie McBuckets could fill it up. He was a fun player to watch. So,
by my count here, when he tops 3,000 points, he would become the 12th player to do so.
Tremendous.
It would be interesting to see, trying to recall, of course, you know, Blue Edwards had that unbelievable final season, I guess maybe last two seasons, but especially that 88-89 season when he ended up going in the first round to the Utah Jazz. But, you know, how had Blue been able to get a more full career in, it would have been interesting to see where he could have stacked up all time. But, just a very elite company there for Max Asmus, as he would be just the 12th player in NCAA history or Division I history to score 3,000-plus points. But bringing this back, Johnny Robertson says, has anyone seen that Will Wade or what Will Wade is doing at McNeese State? They are 16-2 and have beaten UAB, VCU, and Michigan in 10 seasons. His worst record is 18-15. Of course, Will Wade, everything that went on at LSU, getting it done with the Cowboys at McNeese.
That is very impressive. Very impressive stat there.
And then Johnny Robertson, excellent point here. What Pistol Pete did with nearly 3,700 points or whatever that total was, he did it without a three-point shot.
Oh, man, that is a great point. I mean, it's funny when you go back.
He'd be 4,000 plus, probably.
Yeah, oh, man, easily, yeah. When you go back and you watch basketball, you watch those clips from like the early 80s with like Georgetown and, you know, the Michael Jordan game against Georgetown for the championship at UNC. I mean, it looks so odd without the 3-point line. It's hard to imagine that we ever played this game without a 3-point line now, because it's so prominent, you know, in everything. I mean, you watch an NBA game and literally, I would say 60% of the shots are from the 3-point line. It's unbelievable. So, very good point there by Johnny. I don't know if there'll ever be another Pistol Pete.
A game that I wanted to bring up, I believe you had the opportunity to catch the third overtime. You referenced the Creighton Blue Jays. Creighton ranked 18th. Man, what a game that was between them and the Seton Hall Pirates. Triple overtime, and then they went on bringing up that final. I believe it was 97-94 as Seton Hall knocked down a three at the buzzer after Creighton and converted some free throws to stretch the lead out to six. But that was an unbelievable game that I started watching there. I guess it was late in the first overtime.
Yeah, Creighton has really put together a good program for a long time now. They're a fun team to watch. And, of course, Seton Hall from my home state of New Jersey. I love Seton Hall, but was a fun game to watch, Bubba. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention I thought was pretty cool this week. I'm sure you saw it. The reunion for the Fab Five at Michigan, which I thought was very cool. And there was some problems with a few of those guys. There was a falling out for many years. But sounds like they kind of put it behind them, moved on past it, and it was cool to see. Did you see that picture, Bubba? It was obviously Juwan Howard.
I did. I saw them sitting courtside, and yeah, good for them. I'm glad whatever differences were there, at least been to some degree, if not completely, put aside and worked through. And Michigan's had quite a struggle this year. And I think at one point lost 5 or 6 consecutive games. But, yeah, that was definitely interesting. And also, you know, taking
can
a look.
Can you name the Fab Five, Bubba? I'm going to put you on the spot here. Can you name the Fab Five?
I can. Of course, you have Juwan Howard, who is you know, leading the program right now, has been the head coach for the last few or several seasons. Chris Weber. And then you have Jalen Rose, your longtime NBA analyst. And then Ray Allen. Ray Jackson. And,
I knew you knew that. I knew it was a little a slip there.
Slip of the tongue, yeah. Jimmy King.
Excellent. Yeah, good job. Good job. Man, what a team. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm Juwan Howard, I'm using that to my advantage in recruiting. You know, the Fab Five, the name, the cachet, the history. I want to use that in recruiting. There's no reason why they can't be, you know, tremendous at basketball year in and year out. So I just wanted to mention that because I thought it was pretty cool to see.
Kind of along those lines, it's funny, since you brought up the Fab Five, they really started a kind of revolution in college basketball as far as the way shorts were worn and the length of shorts. And you saw that remain the same for probably at least about 20 years. But over the last several years, the trend has been more of the John Stockton variety. I'm not necessarily as short as the former Utah Jazz and Gonzaga point guard, but in some cases, for some players such as Quiñones in the last few years for Memphis, it was more like a diaper.
Yeah. I think we're in a good era right now for shorts. Like, there was nothing worse than the 80s when you would see like Bird and McHale and Parrish with shorts. You know, we would call those nut huggers, you know, back in the day. You would have to wear spandex underneath them just to kind of cover your legs a little. I mean, it was so short, it was embarrassing. And then you had the ultra long shorts, like you mentioned, which was also a terrible look, in my opinion. Now it's like a mid thigh, you know, it's a good era for shorts. You know what I'm saying?
I'm more of a middle ground, but if I had to go one way or the other, I'm definitely going to the shorter variety. But I never understood how guys could play with shorts over their knees. Like when I've had, you know, when I've forgotten a belt or, you know, had shorts that were just a little too long and I have something over my knee, I don't feel like I can move as well as I need to when I'm playing whatever sport.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you.
It's restricting.
Very restricting. Is it? I'll tell you a little side story, Bubba. I think that this is something I always think about. So, talking about shorts here, the high school I went to in New Jersey, very, very blue collar town. You know, definitely wasn't a wealthy town by any stretch. Very blue collar. You know, our high school didn't have a lot. You know, we made do, but we didn't have a lot every year. So when the basketball season would start, the coach would have a huge box with the uniforms in it. So the shorts and the jerseys. And within that box, there were only 3 pairs of extra large shorts. For whatever, I mean, we just didn't have, the high school just didn't have money. And they would replace those uniforms like every 15 years. So there were 3 pairs, and I'll never forget it. My junior year, he brought the box out, and he sat it down on a table in the locker room. And me and my buddies, my teammates, we literally were fighting for the extra large shorts. Like, I mean, it was like a mosh pit in the locker room, trying to figure out who got those extra large shorts. I mean, it was hilarious to think about. I did come out with a pair of XLs, thank God. But I had to fight for them. So me and my old teammates always joke around about that from high school. But that's a story. I'll never forget that one. But yeah,
I remember something very similar my sixth grade year. You know, I made the middle school team, one of just two or three sixth graders to do so. And that situation, you know, unfortunately existed where we didn't have enough the proper sizes in shorts. And unfortunately, our first game, you know, my dad was partially pissed and partially just laughing because he knew how embarrassed I was when I came out wearing shorts that were probably shorter than John Stockton. And I felt like I ran out in some Fruit of the Looms or something, some tidy whities.
You need to listen. I'm going to call your dad. I'm going to call Gary tomorrow. we got to get some pictures of that for the show. Cause that would be, high ratings right there.
Yeah. Something like that. I know we've already been over the American standings, but before we get out of here, we'll run through some other scores. I mentioned Charlotte taking down North Texas today at Halton Arena. That final was 56-44. 49ers led by 5 at halftime and then went on to the 12-point victory. They were led by Lusai Patterson. He had 20 points as Charlotte moves into first place in the American with that 5-1 record. And then you have a log jam behind them with five teams at 4-1, just a half game back. SMU blew out Tulsa 103-70 was that score at Moody Coliseum. Harris led the Mustangs with 18 points, 10 assists, and 6 rebounds, while Haggerty had 19 for the Golden Hurricane. Rice took down Temple on 69-66. The Owls are really struggling. Let's hope that continues as they will be at Williams Arena Menchie's Coliseum a week from tomorrow as the Pirates will look to sweep that season series. And that does it for the scores in the American. Taking a look, I mentioned that result with Creighton and Seton Hall, the triple overtime thriller this afternoon up in New Jersey. Right now, you have number one UConn, Tristan Newton, and the Huskies are playing Villanova. You also have seventh-ranked Duke. They are losing to Pittsburgh. I know a game that you noted earlier, Matt, was number five Houston. You know, Kelvin Sampson's club's right there again. You know, very much capable of making a Final Four national title run. But the Cougars, obviously transitioning to the Big 12, they are now 3-2 in the Big 12 after a 57-42 win against UCF. You know, we always hate to see the Knights come up short, but they held the Knights to just 14 points in the first half.
Unbelievable defense you see from Houston to be able to hold that team to 42 points. And that is really an impressive stat. And UCF's been playing very good basketball. So pretty impressive there.
And one thing, we'll go ahead and wrap with this, you know, before we plug some upcoming content and promote our social media. But I'm sure you saw it on social media. I had not seen it live, but when UCF upset the Texas Longhorns, and I thought about this because I saw that Texas today had a thrilling last second win against number 9 Baylor. That one was also in Austin, but UCF went into Austin and won earlier this week. And following the game, there was a little altercation between Texas head coach and the UCF players. And UCF went into the handshake line with multiple horns down, and Texas did not particularly care for it. And also, you have Frank Haith, the former Tulsa head coach, is on staff there in Austin.
Yeah, a lot of controversy about that. I mean, this is starting to become a really big thing with Texas with the whole horns down thing. I mean, I think they're taking that a little bit too personally, like a little too sensitive about that. I mean, come on. But I do agree. When you're in the hand, you know, in the handshake line at the end, there's no need for that kind of stuff. But Texas, I mean, come on. Let's not take it too seriously.
Yeah. And he said something to the effect, I mean, it's like, cut that bleep out. There's no need for that. He was very complimentary of Johnny Dawkins' club. But like you said, it's one of those things. No, you don't like it. Of course you don't like it. But it definitely has gone to a whole nother level. And like going back a couple years to the Super Regional when the Pirates played the Longhorns and Texas fans were mad at East Carolina for starting a purple and gold cheer while they were trying to sing the Eyes of Texas or something at Clark LeClair Stadium.
Yeah, they're a sensitive bunch down there. And, you know, guess what? It's going to get worse now that the coach reacted like that. Every stadium they go into for the rest of the year, it's going to be horns down. So people are going to have a lot of fun with that. Sometimes you're better off just not reacting to it and just taking the high road. But, I think it was kind of fun to see.
They're definitely going to make it worse, you know, by talking about it. And of course, there are going to be those that are going to do it no matter what. But when you make people more aware how sensitive you are to it, that's certainly going to make more people do it. And just unbelievable, quite honestly. But that will do it for this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime. You know, you can find the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found on all podcast platforms. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And when you subscribe on YouTube, you know, make sure that you click that notification bell. And when you click the notification bell, click all as well. And then anytime we go live or upload new content, you'll be alerted on your device. Speaking of new content, I had the opportunity on Friday afternoon to catch up with East Carolina great and Philadelphia Philly, Jeff Hoffman. Hoff, nice enough to give us 45 minutes of his time. And Jeff, what a year he had in 2023 for Philadelphia. Excellent season for the Phillies as they came up just shy against the D-backs, falling, I believe it was in 7 games and nearly making a World Series. But Philadelphia offered Jeff a $2.2 million deal this year. He avoided arbitration, and Jeff appeared in 54 games last year with, obviously, with them making the decision they did, excellent results to bring the hard-throwing 6'5 right-hander back to that Phillies club that has a chance to make a run in 2024. And so that interview is actually premiering right now if you're watching us live. But if you have the opportunity in the next few days, go back and check that out. Excellent 45-minute conversation talking about his recruitment, his career with the Pirates, and his journey throughout professional baseball. Also, you know, be sure to follow us on social media on X at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram and TikTok at The Sports Objective, and like and follow our Facebook page. But for Matt Semenza, we appreciate you tuning in to this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime. Again, East Carolina falls this afternoon to the UAB Blazers 69-61 at Bartow Arena in Birmingham. And we'll talk to you soon on the Sports Objective as we'll have a preview show. Darren Vaught will be joining us on Thursday. And odds are we'll have some content for you between now and then. But for everyone here and the whole TSO team, we'll talk to you soon. And go Pirates! We'll be right back.
That's what purple